Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
It's the one where I snuck over.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember just before
the
shit hit the fan?
Yeah, I do remember that.
I think it was that one.
Wow. It's nice. I have seen you.
Yeah, I've seen
in
you
in real
lot.
Life.
It's quite a lot. Actually.
Since then. But just not for recording purposes.
No, it's really nice. I think it lends a new dynamic.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm worried it's making your voice sound echoey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I come closer to the mic?
No, it's
closer.
Well, it's quite sexual when you do.
Closer.
Yeah. You all right?
Yeah, good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Feel awkward now, actually.
Looking into each other's eyes. We've got drinks, haven't we?
We got drinks.
Importantly.
For things we will talk about later.
Oh, that was a rubbish drink.
Yeah.
The label, that's why.
I'm drinking beer and Gabby's drinking wine.
Mm. Yeah. So good. You've got a full bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, it's useful. Gabby, also, I'd like to describe her outfit today, which is it's kind of summer in a dress.
Oh, thanks, mate.
It's so sad. It's like pale lilac.
I'm actually not mad about the colour. It's a bit girly for me.
It's actually unusually girly for you, but I think it suits you and
thanks.
You should continue to wear it.
Gosh, thanks. A little cos number.
Lovely. I love it when cos goes girly.
Yeah, it's weird.
Do you know what I mean?
It's still like shapeless, largely.
Mm. Well, it's got a nice nipped in waist.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks, mate.
A cat sleeve.
Well, it's been nice. I've just driven over to your house and cried in the car listening to George Michael, Jesus to a Child.
Yeah, and as I was saying off air, that's the soundtrack to my childhood because my mum used to play that album constantly.
It's such a good album.
It is such a good album. Yeah, my mum would agree.
Makes me cry.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get really into it, especially if you're belting it out in the car.
Yeah, which I always am in the car.
Yeah.
On my own.
Who are we talking to today, Gabs?
Well, we've got Claire Lynch,
aww,
who is an author.
An author.
An author. Of a book called Small on Motherhoods, which came out last year. And she is brilliant.
Yeah, it's about being in a same-sex couple and thinking trying for a baby is going to be hard. And then realising that trying for a baby is really hard.
Mm-hmm. And then it gets harder when they arrive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Claire's twins were prematurely born.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really a really thoughtful memoir. And so, we got her on.
Yeah, she was, it actually feels now like we did that interview ages ago.
Yeah.
It was about a month ago, I reckon, month and a half.
Maybe, yeah.
It was the first interview that we did for this series, actually.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed our chat, but I think we're both like a bit rusty and a bit nervous before we did it.
What is podcast?
But she was really chilled and we just had a really nice chat with her, so it's fine.
She's great. So you will enjoy it, guys. You will.
Yeah. And we're talking to Professor Tim.
Yes, we are. It's a good one.
It is.
It's that annoying thing when people say to you, would you like to hold my newborn baby? Because I've heard that it rubs off.
Oh, it's just so offensive. So now you can give them a definitive answer about whether it works to hold a newborn baby or not.
Yeah. Does it spring your ovaries into action?
I don't want to offer any spoilers here, so I won't carry on talking.
Leave everyone guessing as to what Professor Tim has to say about that particular question.
Yeah, and that's kind of it, right, today? Mm-hmm. I've got some news, which you will find out in a little bit.
Yeah, it's a big day.
I've got some news. It's not that kind of news. It's just normal news.
It's just regular IVF news.
It's not like, so we've got some news.
No, it's not that.
No.
It's definitely not that, guys. No. Don't worry, you don't have to turn off your phone. I've got updates of my own kind.
Yeah. Yeah. After your big revelation last week.
Yeah. Oh. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good one.
Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, if you'd like to contact us, you can Twitter us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can Instagram us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
I just want to say a big thank you to everybody who rated and reviewed the podcast when I kind of did a call to action. Mm. We got so many reviews and they were all nice, which is really good.
People are good.
Yeah, people are good. If you would like to rate and review the podcast, that would be really helpful.
Of course, please do feel free.
Yeah, helps other people to find it.
It does.
And then, yeah, I guess that's... Oh, buy our book, obviously.
Indeed, yes, yeah. buy the book. That's a big fat negative for anyone who didn't understand the theme.
Yeah. Available, at least one copy available at my local bookshop. I don't know about others.
Really?
Yeah, there's one in Waterstones, Canterbury.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not on my local one, but I think they specialise in fiction.
Oh, maybe. We should start a campaign.
Yeah, we should. Or I could just go in and say, hi, I'm a local author. Would you like to sell my book? And they probably would go, yeah, but I'm too embarrassed.
And then you'll say, well, I've got about 50 under my bed, which is more than enough to have.
If you are the owner of Harbour Books in Whitstable, do feel free to get in touch.
Indeed.
That buzzing you might be able to hear in the background is my neighbour starting his car.
Oh, gosh, what kind of car has he got?
It is a BMW M5 racing thing.
Oh, Speedy Gonzales.
It's an absolute fucking beast.
Wow.
Yeah, and he just like wakes the neighbourhood up when it starts.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good times. Now he's woken the podcast listeners up as well.
Absolutely. So I will leave you guys with the sound of my neighbour driving down the street.
Let's accelerate to the next part of the show.
No way. Enjoy the episode.
You.
Sorry, just having a big slurp of beer there.
Ooh, what's that? You're drinking beer, is it?
I'm drinking... On this day, I'm drinking Estrella. Because, listeners, tomorrow, I'm having a fucking embryo transfer.
Oh, my God. Like, tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Today for the listeners.
You guys, today, Emma's having an embryo transfer.
I'm having an embryo put in me. It's been so straightforward. I had an initial consultation. She looked at me and said, oh, there's some endometriomas there, whatever. Then on the first day of my period, I emailed them. They sent me some drug. No, it was the first day of my period before the period that we were going to do the transfer on. They sent me some drugs. I, on the first day of my period, started the drugs.
Uh-huh.
It took me a while to figure out what the first day of my period was.
Which was the last time we spoke, right?
Yeah.
Or have we spoken twice?
I think we've spoken since then, yeah. And then it's just gone so smoothly. And then I went in for I did admittedly have a bit of trouble getting in touch with the hospital.
Yeah.
With the clinic. But yeah, I went in for a scan. She said, oh, you're looking really good. 13 millimetres.
13 millimetres. That's like a waterbed.
Yeah, no, I think it's better than my last transfer. I will admit that they did find some more endometriomas and also some possible adenomyosis.
Oh, full gamut of...
which, as your discerning listeners will know, can impact pregnancy.
Yeah.
But am I optimistic? No. No, I could never be accused of being optimistic. I am still very disconnected from the situation. Mm. And I decided that I was going to find a way to connect myself to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically went to the shops and I bought some really expensive stinky cheese.
Oh, very good.
And some booze.
Right.
And some of the kind of cured meat that you're not allowed to eat, mm-hmm, when you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate them all in 2 days.
Okay, well done. Nice.
And I feel like that's saying I'm going to be pregnant soon, so I need to enjoy these things.
Yeah, it is kind of doing that. As is the beer you're drinking
now. As is the beer, yeah. What I'm not doing is cutting down on stuff.
Yes.
I thought about it at the beginning, and then I thought, eh. So I didn't.
Okay.
But, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I might be pregnant tomorrow.
Mm.
I mean, I will be pregnant tomorrow legally.
Yes, I suppose you will. You'll be poo-po.
I'll be poo-po. But I might get pregnant, and I might not. But I've really enjoyed myself in the meantime. It's been so much less stressful. I think this is how IVF is supposed to work.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Famous last words.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, yeah. I'm still like really, I've had so many messages from people being like, oh yeah, I went into my second. I thought it was going to be easy. Mm. Wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And but there's this just like arrogant little voice in my head that's like, well, it worked last time. Why wouldn't it work this time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's just all going to come crashing down.
I can totally imagine that.
Yeah.
That voice is there, not that it's all going to come crashing down. Because I, even though I'm not trying or going into IVF right now, I do kind of, some part of me feels the same.
Yeah.
But I think it would just work again. So I need to know whether I'm ready, because it would obviously work again.
But I think we're humans, right?
Yeah.
Like humans, you know, what's the old phrase of, somebody attributed it to Einstein saying, you know, the real sign of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And like, I feel like this is the opposite of that, right?
Yeah.
So like you do the same thing twice and expect the same result. That's what you expect. We're like a species of engineers and people like that.
Yeah.
So I think there is a voice that's just like, it's going to work. I'll be fine.
Yeah. But I think that's great. I think it's good that you're going into this positively. I think even if, you know, even if it's misplaced and it doesn't work.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing me back down to it. That buzzing like... that you just heard was my drugs alarm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do we need to administer some drugs?
No. Well, I'll administer in a bit.
Okay.
No one wants to come to the toilet with me. No. I'll put that out there.
I certainly don't. I think it's good. I think having been through this process with you once before, it's and it's obvious, we know the reason why the situation is different. You do have a daughter now.
Mm.
So, and it's obvious, because you do seem a lot more relaxed and into it. So
yeah,
it's good. I'm glad. I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, I'm definitely relaxed. I wouldn't say I'm into it. I'd say I'm actually kind of out of it, and that's in a way a good thing.
Maybe.
Like, but yeah, I think what I'm not going to do this time is do a 2 week wait episode at all. Like I'll give you the results of my 2 week wait, and then that will be that for me, because I think last time, you know, we shared the kind of intimate details of pregnancy after infertility. If you want to listen to that, you can go back and listen to it. If it doesn't work out, then, you know, obviously I'll talk about my decision making. Do we go to another round?
Mm.
Like there's a part of me that's like, maybe we don't. We'll have two more embryos. I mean, obviously, if we get to embryo transfer stage tomorrow, because we know plenty of people who the embryo hasn't thawed, or, you know, we know loads of people like that.
Yeah.
So I'm very aware of all the impediments. And I'm also aware that if I feel really, really, really sad, like maybe I don't want to do this again. Maybe that's it. Maybe that was my try.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you just leave your options open.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll definitely have like a debrief, whatever happens.
I mean, next week we'll be chatting about it regardless, but maybe we just won't have that intensity of a full episode dedicated to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so next week I'll be mid 2 week wait, and then the week after that we'll know. And between the... basically, we've got my friend and her family with 3 children coming one weekend.
Lovely.
Yeah, and then it's my daughter's birthday.
Lovely.
And then the following weekend, my friend and her family coming with 3 children, and also a birthday party for a 3-year-old. And in between those two events, it's going to be test day.
Where does Carfest come in?
Carfest comes in at some point during that.
At what point am I going to be dragging you on stage to talk about infertility? Are you going to, is this like the day after test day?
I don't want to talk about it. No, Carfest is about a week after test day.
Okay, right. So the dust will have settled.
Yeah, but I've got, what I'm trying to say is I've got a very kid-heavy couple of weeks coming up.
And of course, as we know, hanging around children rubs off and makes you pregnant. So that's what Tim's about to say, right?
Yeah, it's probably going to work. That's probably going to be the magic bullet. Mm-hmm. It's just hanging around with a million whiny toddlers. yeah, I mean, they're all nice kids, but it's definitely an intense couple of weeks. And these visits have been planned for like months and months. So I don't I don't think I need to cancel. Like, maybe after test day, I revisit it. But
yeah. Lay some groundwork down to be like, just so you know, this is happening.
Yeah.
So that weekend might be out.
Yeah. But they're like kind friends.
Hmm.
So I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Sure. And also, one of them I saw during my last 2 week wait. So I kind of see her as like a talisman.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was like, she was like, do you want me to cancel? We don't need to come. I was like, I need you to come.
No, you don't understand. You were the good luck.
Yeah. You're a charm.
You with the pink t-shirt, black socks combo that needs to work.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's fine.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Getting up. Traveling into that London.
Yeah. Getting a baby put in me. John is taking 2 hours out of work to come.
How very charitable of him.
I was like, I'm pretty sure most people, when they're trying to get their wives pregnant, like to spoon them afterwards for a bit. Or leave some money on the nightstand. Like, not even a cigarette.
I, however, though, am also in London in a similar area to you, and I'm free for cigarettes.
Do you want to come and spoon for a bit?
Yeah, come and spoon. Light your Marlboro.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because, his attitude to it is so different from last time as well. And he's so disconnected. And I think it's because he just hasn't... I haven't called on him for the emotional support of last time. Like, he's been fairly unaware of the drugs. It's not like he's joined in.
You've been quite quiet about it.
Yeah, I have talked about it a bit because there have been some days that I've had like a volcanic temper, like PMT squared, where I just haven't been able to talk to him. Like, he came and sat down next to me. He got home from work one night. He often gets home quite late and sat down with one of those big like packets of crisps and started eating the crisps and rustling the packet.
Ooh.
And I was like, babe, I just want you to know that I'm like at like PMT level 10 and that is going to make me hit you in the face. So could you just go and do it somewhere else? And he just like slunk out like a sad dog. I tried to be really like reasonable. Yeah.
Oh, someone should eat some crisps.
It's not really bad because he had a long day at work, but I was like, I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
I'm going to absolutely hit you.
I can understand that. That's very fucking annoying.
Yeah. You know when like every bone in your body is just like, yeah. And like sound is my thing. I've got like misophonia.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not deal with it.
Oh. I'm sure tomorrow's going to go swimmingly.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be great. Maybe we'll do a little bit of a recording if I see you.
Yes. Yes. Let's do that.
You can interview me.
Yeah.
About the 3 minutes of excitement.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not looking forward to the bladder thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like you don't need as full a bladder as everyone says. Like, you don't need to be bursting.
No.
I just don't know if I've got that much control. It is, yeah.
Just have a bottle of water with you so you can top up quickly if they say it's not full enough.
Stress.
Yeah, you'll be fine. What are you wearing? Easy access?
Oh, yeah, I don't know yet, actually. I haven't even booked a train ticket.
Trousers?
Yes. No, dress.
Dress, right.
Dress. Although an embryo won't drop out of trousers. Are you
going to wear the same dress as last time?
I could, do you know
what dress you were wearing?
I wore.
You don't know what you were wearing when you got pregnant?
No, I don't. Fuck. I am bad at this, aren't I?
No.
Well, anyway. Guys, I'll speak to you next week and you can find out exactly how traumatising it was.
We can't wait.
Oh, do you want to do your update?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, mate. You made this all about me.
That's all right. Yours is slightly more on message. It's important than mine.
Maybe, mate, what about your hospital procedure?
As listeners of last week's episode know, I went into hospital to have a general anaesthetic last Monday to have what I now know is called a hemorrhoidectomy.
Oh, lovely.
I'll never forget what it's called. while I was in the hospital, several people remarked about how it was a notoriously painful operation, which I just really didn't need to hear at the time.
No.
And
I'm sorry I'm laughing.
It is funny. And you very gallantly collected me.
Yeah, I did.
And it was, it was just, oh.
You haven't raised the most important part.
Yeah. So, okay, when I was going in for my anaesthetic, I was lying on the bed and the anaesthetist was chatting to me as they do. They always make small talk, don't they?
They do,
tell me what you do. And I was like, oh, I'm a journalist. And I thought, oh, this is relevant. And I also have a podcast about IVF. Maybe he's done IVF before.
Yeah.
As in worked on it. And the nurse piped up and she was like, oh, what's it called? And I said, it's called Big Fat Negative. And she was like, oh, Gabby, I should have recognised the name. I listened to your podcast. I've been on my own IVF journey as well. And I was like, you know, when you're kind of like starting to get a bit sleepy and you're like, oh, the last time I went under, I was doing IVF. Oh, it was so funny. I was like, oh my God, this is so weird. But then I came around and I was like, oh, I hope she's around so I can chat to her now rather than me just going. But she was gone. She obviously finished her shift. So it's a shame. So I never caught her name. And if she's listening, hello.
Yeah, give us a shout.
I'm glad that I cracked a joke about wearing the world's most sexy shorts with a bum hole missing. And yeah, it's been quite a tough week. I have to say, it's not a nice recovery.
Is it not?
It's not.
Oh, May, I'm sorry.
There's been moments where I thought I wouldn't be able to get through it.
Oh, May.
But hey, we're okay. We're on the front foot, I think.
Are we on the upward slope?
We are, I think. I hope. But yeah, it's all good. And it's, I don't know, it's funny. I keep like, with you, I don't know, you doing this transfer obviously is going to have an impact on me. But like, so far I'm kind of just like, I'm fine about it.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get a bit angry at people who have second babies.
Right. Okay.
As in, not angry because I want what they have. Angry because they're making me feel like I should have something else.
I think that's probably one of the things that drove me towards this.
I just feel like the prevailing narrative is that you should have two children.
Yeah.
Everyone does it. Everyone assumes if you don't have fertility problems, even if you do have fertility problems, which I find infuriating, that you should want to have another and that you should just do it. And I'm just like, where's all the
one and done stuff?
Where's all the one and dones? Where's all those narratives?
There's a good podcast called Only You.
Yeah, I have actually dipped my toe in that. I've followed them on Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, and obviously there are people who can't have any, and it's just like, I don't know why I have to feel inadequate now.
No. It's funny though, isn't it? Because nobody's being like, well, maybe they are, but most people are not being like, look, I've got two kids, you should have two kids.
No.
But it feels like they are.
No, of course. No one is saying that to me. I mean, you know, people say like, do you reckon you're going to have another one? Like our friends asked us the other day who've just had another one. Are you thinking about number two? Because it's like a natural thing to say to someone. And I'm not angry at them, but yeah, I am angry at random passers-by with two children suddenly for some reason. I'm like, you reinforcing the narrative.
It's like Emma Barnett doing her, like trying to figure out what the age gap between kids is. It's the same vibe. When people have kids, when people have a second kid, and their kid is younger than my daughter, I get bitter. I'm just like,
why did you do that so quickly?
How dare you? What is wrong with you? Like, I don't want to go back to Deliciously Ella, because I have since met her and she was really nice.
For sure.
But she obviously like had her first kid and then like 6 months later was pregnant with her second. And I was raging.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? And I try to be inclusive. I try not to be unreasonable.
But sometimes you have to be.
Things to do with this, with babies, it's so emotive, obviously. And we, you know, I'm not complaining because obviously I'm very, very lucky and privileged to be in a position to say I've already got one and I'm thinking about having a second. But yeah, it's twitch turning some switch off on inside me that's just like fury.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
No, I've been there. I am there. I'm always there.
Yeah.
But then, like, I feel like if this doesn't work, if I can't have a second, like, maybe I'll just chill out because I'll just be like, well, I can't. So
yeah, I tried. It didn't work. Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. And when I say I can't, like, what I mean is I'm not going through egg retrieval again. That's never going to happen. So I, you know, if we try 3 embryos and they don't work, I feel like it will almost bring me peace knowing that I've tried.
Yeah.
I've done my best. I knew where my red line was. Like, I hit my limit. My limit was too low. That's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I hope so. Yeah. I'll try and not be furious at you if you get pregnant and have a second child. Try and contain that.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
No worries.
Okay.
Anyway, good luck, mate. Oh, before you go.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a little present for you.
You got a present. Got a present for you. Me.
Yeah. It's a double kind of double reason. Oh, present.
And can I just? It says to Emma for
getting your Nunu out and for saving my ass.
For getting your Nunu out and for saving my ass. G. Kiss. Not even Gabby. Just G.
Big G.
Okay. Can I just say it's got lovely seagull wrapping paper.
Yeah.
Or dove.
That's because we live by the sea now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So appropriate.
So appropriate.
My Nunu. Oh. Glowed candles. Booty decorative candle. Is it rude?
I wouldn't say it's rude.
Is it goop vibes?
I would say it's a celebration.
Is it rude?
No.
It's a bomb and a vulva. It's beautiful. It's one of those candles I'm never going to be able to light because it's too pretty.
Yeah.
Oh, it's what a lovely bomb as
it's
well.
It's a great bomb, isn't it?
Guys, I'll put a picture of it up on Instagram. Thanks, mate. It's beautiful. I love it.
Always, I hope it's your talisman.
Oh, thank you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Hey, so happy to have you on. We start all our podcasts the same. And that is to ask you to tell us about your journey.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, I mean, it was a, you know, classic girl meets girl story. We met at university, fell in love, got married, and then, you know, had that sort of conversation people have in those situations about children. And I think somewhat naively, by which I mean extremely naively, thought that we would kind of pop down to our local fertility clinic and, you know, have the sort of basic IUI package and walk away with a baby, you know, by tea time. You know, as a lot of listeners to your podcast will know, you know, the story didn't kind of quite work out like that. So flash forward about sort of, I think, sort of 5.5, sort of 6 years of, you know, the way fertility treatment kind of upgrades itself kind of each cycle, you know, the slight, each time, you know, slightly more aggressive drug protocols or, you know, slightly more invasive tests and procedures and a sort of endless throwing ourselves into that kind of bottomless pit of hope and, you know, money, which is probably familiar to lots of people listening here. And then with our, am I going to say journey as well? I mean, you started it with the journey, I suppose, so I'm going to have to join
it's
in.
It's a placeholder word until we can think
of a
better
word. Disparagingly, we must add. We've been trying to find a replacement for the word.
I know, it's hard. I'm struggling to offer one up, to be honest. So, it is hard. you know, I did get pregnant as a result of IVF treatment and then had a miscarriage. And it was a kind of a turning point, really, which was something that I sort of have written about in this book, which is a kind of, I suppose, something of a revelation, which was after having tried everything, thrown everything at it, you know, eaten my body weight and pineapple core and all of that stuff. I kind of had to make a decision, which was, do I want to be pregnant or do I want to be a mother?
Right.
And so that was the point at which we made a decision to switch over our roles in the reciprocal IVF. And when we did that, my wife, Beth, became pregnant with embryos that had been collected from me. So we both were doing the IVF kind of cycles, but those kind of separate parts of it. And that's how we made our family. So it's kind of a often sort of seems now a sort of short story. I guess there's, you know,
we'll get
you know, all of that.
That's quite an abridged version.
It's an abridged version. I mean, you know, we've all got places to go later, I guess. But you know, that sort of you know, kind of being in it from different perspectives, I suppose, is kind of my experience.
I was going to ask you about that, if you could maybe just explain what reciprocal IVF is for anyone listening who doesn't know, and then just interested to know what that dynamic was like, because as you say, you've kind of played both parts in a sense.
So reciprocal IVF is when in a same-sex couple, basically one woman is going to carry the baby or babies, and the other is with the other's eggs, or so the embryo. So the egg collection part of the IVF takes place for one partner, but when it comes to the transfer is made to her partner. So for a lot of same-sex couples, for women, it's sometimes seen as a way of feeling that you're both biologically involved in the making of your children. It's a way of feeling, you know, that nobody is a sort of observer of the fertility treatment, that you're both, you know, experiencing that whole, I suppose that kind of physical engagement with it, and also a kind of, I mean, I suppose it's sort of maybe for some people also a kind of way of feeling that the burden of all of that sort of the injections and, you know, whatever, it's kind of also something you're both experiencing. So that's the way, and we would, you know, I suppose, as you say, we kind of both had experience of both kind of roles of that.
But what are your emotions? At certain points. Like, I feel like if you have gone into this thinking, I'm going to get pregnant, and then you can't, and then you have to watch, you know, obviously the love of your life, but also, you know, with my husband, I'm quite competitive sometimes, but you know, you've got to watch another person be pregnant with a child that you wanted to be pregnant with. Is that hard, or is that, are you just getting over that? Or
I think the short answer is no, it's not hard actually, because I mean, or it wasn't for me, because I think, you know, it's about the, you know, it's about the two of you making your family. And in a sense, whatever the makeup of your, you know, family structure, kind of in most cases, one person is doing that. Although there are lesbian couples where both of them are pregnant at the same time, which, you know, all hats off to them. But, you know, I don't know who does the shoes up, or, you know, who drives. All of that is just a kind of, that's a real, you know, impressive feat as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. I think everybody assumes, and certainly at the time, you know, I think there was a narrative from the counsellor at the fertility clinic, the narrative that it would be really destructive, and it could be, you know, that there would be feelings of jealousy or resentment. But I think it's not really, I think it's not really like that when what you're trying to, when you can kind of remember that what you're trying to achieve is having children together.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'm sorry I made the exact same assumption that everyone made.
No, I mean, I get it. I mean, I see in a way why you, why people do make that assumption, because especially when you know what that kind of feeling of investment in working so hard to get pregnant means to you. And the kind of sacrifices you, you physically go through to get there. But yeah, I mean, I think also it's a sort of, what's the way to describe this really? I'm conscious that it's also an avenue that had my partner been a man, I wouldn't have had. Right? Yeah. So it's a kind of, you know, I could be, you know, I think rather than feel kind of torn up with, you know, jealousy or a kind of competitive, it's more, thank goodness that between us we managed to make that happen.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, what a kind of what a funny privilege in a way, you know, that was kind of lurking, you know, in plain sight, really, that we, you know, and I think that feeling that, okay, I wasn't able to do that part, but I was, I mean, I don't like to brag, but really very good at producing eggs. Right? Like it's, you know, something of a forte, turns out. So, you know, so the teamwork really did make the dream work in that sense. So that was okay. There's a sort of sense that it was a way of kind of getting to that kind of place.
Was there ever, after your loss, which I think we'll talk about in a minute, but was there ever a diagnosis that made you think, okay, well, I can't do this bit anymore? Or was it just to kind of like that had happened, so you thought, right, let's try something else?
Yeah, no, frustratingly, I had that sort of unexplained infertility diagnosis where every kind of cycle, they'd be like, everything looks fine, the tests are all fine, the numbers are all fine. It's just, you know, that sort of, it's not working, we don't really know why. So I think it was one of the reasons why it ended up being such a long process, and why there wasn't a kind of, why we maybe didn't get to that decision sooner. It's because if there isn't a diagnosis, I think it's very hard to stop, right? Or to kind of make another decision, because, you know, all the doctors are telling you is, you know, basically everything seems fine. You know, it's sort of a numbers game, isn't it? If you take enough chances, there's no reason necessarily why it won't work out. But, you know, there comes a point where it's not working out and you've got to, you know, read the cards yourself, haven't you?
And it's, you know, there's a lot. It is a lot. So can I ask, I'm always interested because obviously IUI is the first port of call for same-sex couples often, and I wondered what your thoughts are on it. Did you, you didn't get pregnant from the IUI, right?
No, and I think it's a, I mean, it's a slightly kind of contentious area right now, isn't it? Because you know, you've probably been following in the news that lots of, you know, same-sex couples are kind of made to pay for private IUI treatment in order to prove themselves eligible for NHS IVF treatment. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a kind of an interesting thing because it's sort of that assumption that there won't be any fertility issues with same-sex couples is kind of quite pervasive.
Right.
And, you know, in a sense, there's no reason why you wouldn't have, you know, any of the same kind of underlying issues. That's your sexuality is not kind of determining the you know, quality of your eggs or the, you know, however welcoming your womb is or any of those things. So I think I think for quite a lot of people, I think that sort of IUI can be a sort of prolonging can kind of prolong the process in a sense. Which, and I'm not always sure, I mean, I can see why the argument is to be, as you know, to avoid the most kind of invasive and medicalized processes if you can. But I think for a lot of people, if that's not working, it just kind of, you know, can make people feel they've been kind of held back from getting the most effective, you know, treatments for quite a while sometimes. Yeah.
It's just expensive, isn't it?
Well, the whole thing is very expensive, isn't it, really? Mm. And I think that's sort of, the knowledge of that maybe and kind of the decisions people make with that in mind. Yeah, I think it's kind of not discussed as much as it maybe needs to be, really.
Mm, yeah, it's true. And also, if you think about it, like, this country needs people. We don't actually have enough people to sustain the country. So I've always said that, like, anybody who wants IVF should really get it.
This is a good economic plan. So you just produce more people.
That's what we need to do. Because otherwise we're going to end up with loads of, really old people and there's no one young to pay for them or care for them.
Well, I think you've nailed
that's,
this.
That's our other podcast about population density.
Yeah, if you could send me some graphs on that, that would be excellent. Yeah.
Get the pie charts out.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you talked a bit about your pregnancy loss there. What did it do to you? Like, you know, emotionally, how did you feel afterwards?
Yeah, I've talked about this a little bit on other podcasts as well, and I think I want to use more thoughtful and sensitive language, but it really just turned me mad. I lost my mind. You know, I think that's the only, and I don't mean that in a kind of flippant sort of way. I think that sort of, sense of kind of truly for however, I don't know, for the initial kind of days and weeks, kind of truly operating outside of the real world in a way that I don't think has happened to me at any other point in my life. And I think a lot of that, I mean, it's always awful when that happens to somebody. But I think there is a sort of different, you know, kind of accent to it when you've been so focused and working and all of the things that we've been talking about. When it's been your sort of virtually your full-time job, to get to that point. So I think you completely overreact to the positive positive pregnancy test. Mm-hmm. And immediately do that sort of imagine this child's entire life story, from that minute in the bathroom, because you've been kind of not letting yourself think of it for all of those years, you know. So I think then to go from that sort of relief and joy of that to the sort of more bad news, I think did do something. I think it leaves a kind of permanent damage on a person, actually, or on a couple, kind of whatever happens next.
Yeah. Did it affect your relationship?
Yeah, I think so. And I want to sort of be honest about that sort of initial, the grief of that experience, because I so admire people who are able to be honest about that and the good I think it does for other people to hear it. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, I mean, I don't want to be kind of trite about it, but I think it also was kind of the thing that allowed us to make that really important decision, which changed our lives.
Yeah.
You know, I think it needed to kind of reach that real point of tragedy.
Yeah.
Sorry to say, rather than just kind of frustration and failure. It was a kind of real, like, okay, this can't get worse. What are we going to do about it?
But I suppose the thing is with these situations, when you can never know at the time that this is about to set you on a path that will lead you to success and what you want.
No, exactly.
It's hard in that moment, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and I don't think that, it wasn't like, wake up the next day and think, well, I think, the plan is clear. Everything happens for a reason. Let's, brainstorm plans. It wasn't that, but it was a kind of necessary, I don't know, a motivator in some ways, right? Yeah. It's a kind of prompts a decision to at least do something different, right? Because I think that can be the thing. If you're kind of trapped in this cycle of cycles, right? You just keep on doing the same old thing and eventually it's going to work. It doesn't happen like that, does it really? And at some point, one way or another, something has to change.
And did your something changed? Did the sperm donor ever change? Did you all guys always have the same sperm donor?
No, we did use, you know, across that kind of whole the trying unsuccessfully process. No, we did use different sperm donors during that. So no, I can't blame the anonymous sperm donor in any of the, you know, in the rehashing. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't, you know, like we're making fun, like rightly, of everything happens for a reason, but it does feel to me now that, you know, I can't look back on all of this in any other way than genuinely feeling, you know, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have the children I have now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And that has to be a kind of, you know, clearly I would have much rather not had to go through all of that shit first to get there. Like if that was one of the options available.
We could all do without that.
You know, I'm not saying I wouldn't sign up to that kind of alternative history for sure. But, you know, I think there is a sort of, you know, a bit of a sense of that really, that, you know, for all of these kind of difficult changes, it does do something also kind of toughening to you, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like a weird cosmic thing, isn't it? That you, like once you've kind of been through it and once you've got to where you wanted to be, you can look back at it very philosophically, right?
Yeah.
But then when you're going through it, it's very hard to think of it that philosophically.
Yeah, and I don't want to be smug about it either and kind of say, oh, well, you know, that all sort of served me well in the long run. It's not not really that, but it is certainly the case that, you know, our first baby's twins were born quite prematurely.
Mm.
And then we went through quite a long-ish period of them being in the NICU. And there was at least, there was partly a bit of a sense of like, sure, of course, this is how this is going to end up. You know, but also a bit of a kind of strange, dark comfort that we kind of felt like, well, look, we are kind of, we've been forged now through some pretty tough stuff. We're kind of ready for this other difficult thing.
And what stage were they born at?
They were born at, I think, 32 weeks, 32 plus four. Yeah. Yeah, so one was just under 5 pounds and one was just over 5 pounds.
Wow.
So, you know, it was pretty kind of dramatic stuff.
Mm.
You know, the emergency cesarean and the, you know, the babies being kind of rushed off without us seeing them virtually, all that kind of stuff.
What happened?
They, well, much as they continue to do now in the, you know, real world, kind of were bashing each other around a bit, I think, and burst the amniotic sac of one of them. So they were just ran out of room, I think, really. So I think that's the thing. Yeah. Often when there's kind of twins who are the size of like one quite enormous baby, I think they just kind of get to the point where, you know, where that happens. So in the, you know, in the end, again, I'm happy to say everything was fine, but there was some scary kind of couple of weeks where, you know, we were all moved into the hospital and they were, you know, all of those interventions that we're kind of familiar with for very premature babies. But yeah, I mean, I do think that there was a little bit of a sense that we were armed in a way that maybe we wouldn't have been if it had been plain sailing up until that point.
It's funny, isn't it? Because there's some people who react like that, and then there's some people that we speak to, and you know, something awful happens, and they there's a lot of like, well, I didn't deserve to be a mother anyway. I wasn't supposed to be one.
Oh, yeah.
There's two kind of schools of thought on that, I feel.
Yeah, that's tough, isn't it? I think it's tough enough, though, isn't it? Really, without you know,
punishing
yourself. Layering that on yourself as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so, what prompted you all these years later to write a book about it?
Well, I had so much time on my hands with all of these. No,
the twins.
Yeah, and spoiler, another baby as well. So, no, I started writing it when they were in hospital, when they were born, not really thinking I was writing a book, but just trying to make a bit of sense of it and trying to work out, you know, what was happening to them. You know, there was obviously that very initial stage where Bethan's in her hospital bed in one part of the hospital and I'm in the NICU with the babies and I'm running back and forth with my little notebook saying twin A's on oxygen at this percentage and twin B's getting this antibiotic. Mm. And as I was doing that, started to note, I suppose, kind of what that was like in a sort of more contextual way and think about, you know, trying to kind of get the story of the beginning of our family for our own sakes, really. So it started like that. And I think, you know, as the experience went on, I mean, there are lots of times, I think, when our family is either kind of invisible to the world, that people sometimes don't really see two mums, or it's the opposite and you're sort of super visible and everyone is like, well, that's that family with the two mums. So, you know, that kind of the book comes out of that experience, really. I think we have very fixed ideas of how families are made and what families look like and all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps all of us, really, to have narratives that are not that in the world, you know, kind of stories. Absolutely. That, you know, remind us that it's, you know, all of these things, you know, like sometimes it's very hard for people to start families and that's going to affect how they parent, probably, all of those things. So, you know, part of, I think, the book is, you know, which I'm sure we all kind of experience, but that sense that you are forced to look at the world in a different way.
Yeah.
Because of this experience and because of, you know, being forced to look at the world through the eyes of your children in some ways. Mm. And I really felt that we don't get to acknowledge that very much, actually. And it's sort of an important story, I guess, to sort of remind us all that, you know, we were there once too in some way. And that's kind of a sort of valuable just a valuable way of seeing. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I just think it's a gorgeous idea and a gorgeous name for a book.
Yeah, it's that, because, yeah, it's obviously the, you know, the smallness of, and it's, I think, really relevant to this conversation tonight, because I think it does something to you to really be thinking of your child from the size of a cell.
It's extraordinary that we get that.
You know, that we get that and we're kind of really imagining them at that stage.
Yeah.
And really kind of conscious of that, and then what that does to your kind of ongoing sort of sense of things, really. Sorry, this is getting a bit sort of...
No, I just, do you know what, I remember when I was very early on in my pregnancy, and, you know, I'd seen a tiny smudge on a scan as it went in, and just feeling like that I just had the most tiny vulnerable thing that I had to take care of.
Yeah. And that sense that, I think, if you're conceiving a baby through fertility treatment, that you're so much more conscious of that stage, I think, because you're seeing it on a screen and you're, you know, ticking off your chart of the medication that you're taking on the, you know, in the 2-week wait and all of those kinds of things.
I
think it kind of shifts your kind of perception and your, the way that you're imagining that future, because you're kind of imagining a future earlier than, you know, might otherwise be the case, all of that kind of stuff.
I think it's one of the small benefits that infertile people have, is that you get to have those early scans where you actually see something that most people never ever see.
I've got
little scan photos of my son looking like a beetle. no one else in their normal pregnancy would have those.
No, absolutely. We you know, there was a bit of an early scare, and so there was another early scan, and they look like jelly babies. It's unbelievable that they're so kind of visibly babies already.
Yeah.
And you're right, you wouldn't get to see that. And that's, you know, there are pros and cons, obviously, to kind of having that image and kind of knowing about it. But, yeah, I think it is, a privilege in lots of ways.
And can I ask, obviously you guys went in to have a third child. What was the process of going through the treatment for that? Did you guys have a completely different mindset? I imagine you didn't have quite so much time on your hands. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was a completely different process. We had a frozen embryo.
The more your eggs.
I mean, again, what can you do? Pure class. But they were, they were frozen at the. Basically, it was one of those situations where, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be good enough in that kind of original cycle. Oh, and then, you know, phone call the day after. Oh, I think it's okay to freeze. And then that embryo is sort of, you know, lurking then at the back of your mind. You know, for the kind of subsequent couple of years. And, you know, one of the things I've written about in the book is that feeling. I was very kind of conscious every time I was on the tube going underneath where I knew the fertility clinic was, kind of feeling like we've left a baby there. And we're going to need to go and, you know, get him or her at some stage, you know, and feeling that sort of, because I think once we'd seen it work, once we were living with our children and kind of feeling like it wasn't all a sort of scam, you know, or a kind of fantasy, you know, it kind of gives those frozen embryos a different level of reality too.
It stops being sci-fi and it becomes, you know, real life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it was in practice, actually, it was very healing, I'm going to say, like some sort of hippie, you know, because actually it was very straightforward and we kind of, you know, we were much more relaxed and it was, you know, it all felt like it was all happening on lovely sunny days and it worked fine. And it was, you know, it felt like how it, you know, you want it to be. And it was a really good thing. I mean, again, it's not that simplistic in the moment, because certainly we were both very anxious about being kind of drawn back into that sort of, in my mind I'm now envisaging some sort of, you know, like dark whirlpool that kind of draws you in and you're
like
kind
upside
of
down,
and just being and just being like, what's going to happen if this frozen embryo doesn't work? What do? You've kind of said you want another baby. Do you go through all of that again? Is that quite a greedy thing to do when you already have two children, you know? Is it kind of somehow morally problematic to then put them and you through all of that, knowing what that can look like? I think that is a really challenging kind of stage for people to be at, really. I mean, obviously I'm glad it worked out for all of those, you know, obvious reasons. But yeah, it's certainly like not straightforward, is it? That sense that once the kind of potential is there, you're making quite a different decision.
And it's that, you're right about having those embryos that are just kind of drawing you in.
It's hard, isn't it?
Sponges of babies on your shoulder.
And, you know, we would only ever have one more ever. And we've got three embryos, so who knows what will happen with the other two. But it feels like it's really scary this time, because I do not want to enter the madness again.
But maybe that knowledge means you don't.
Yeah, maybe it does. But, you know, but I won't find out until I step into the portal.
So it's too late. You've opened the vortex.
Well, do you know what's really good, though, for making sensible decisions? Is loads of hormones kind of pumps into you. So, you know, you're bound to feel completely static about the whole thing and just kind of on a level, it'd be fine.
Super excited for that.
I look forward to observing this. Anyway.
Making your decision based on that. Right. Well, Claire, it's been so nice to speak to you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm just so in awe of you and others who are so kind of, I don't know, like that vulnerability that is real kind of warrior bravery in talking about it. And you know, I would have been eating up the podcast, I think, if you know, at that time I think I was the generation of the sort of those slightly creepy message boards.
Oh yeah, they're so great.
You know, where people had those little emojis with, you know, and you would just kind of scan them looking for the answer that you wanted them to have. So, you know, I think these kind of actual real conversations are just such a wonderful thing for, you know, for us all to have and, you know, be part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And plug for the book.
Yeah, the book is called Small on Motherhoods. It's available in paperback now and audiobook. If you want to listen to the bit where I'm clearly crying but pretending not to be, then, you know, go ahead and download that on Audible. Then, you know, and just to be clear, I mean, there are some jokes in it too. I've made it sound very, you know, depressing. But, you know, I hope it's you know, jolly in its own way too.
Bye now.
It's time for
IVF.
I think this is our second silliest one after McDonald's chips.
I can't wait to listen to Professor Tim's response.
Yeah,
because is he as huffy as he was after McDonald's?
I would say incredulous.
Yeah, it's definitely a huff after McDonald's.
Incredulous and swift.
Yes.
Sure.
So, if you missed the beginning, just to reiterate, the question is, if you hold a newborn baby, does some sort of baby magic rub off you and somehow magically get you pregnant, as some people like to say, to jibe, to joke about, shoving your babies at you, going, go on, hold it.
I bet you can't imagine what Professor Tim's answer is.
An idea.
No, sadly, there is no logic or science to that at all, and I really can't think of any way that holding a newborn baby, nice as that might be, could improve either your own natural fertility or improve the chance of an embryo implanting during IVF. So I think if you want to hold newborn babies, then go ahead, but don't do it because you think it's going to improve your own fertility.
Right, that's the end.
That's the end, guys. It's the end. We'll be back next week with another fresh slice of B to the F to the N.
Buffin. To the podcast. I just feel like we needed four there. Who are we talking to next week?
Next week, a real treat for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's the worst girl gang girls. Bex and Laura.
The worst girl gang ever.
Girls.
Ever. We went on their podcast and now they're coming on our podcast to talk about their new book, which has just come out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Came out last week.
Yeah.
If you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. It's also called The Worst Girl Gang. They've also obviously got a really good
imagination
like we do.
Yeah.
But yes, obviously it's a brilliant podcast about baby loss and they do a lot of work in that area and they're very funny. Yeah. So we enjoyed chatting to them.
We did. See you then.
See you then.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.